Regular and supplemental meetings are called to order. I will reset the supplemental meeting. Let's start with a moment of silence for those who are not with us anymore. Thank you. Next, we have the minutes from the December 14th meeting. Do we have any comments or questions on those? Not, can we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Now we look to the public. Does anyone in the public have something they'd like to say? John, anyone online?
I thought that five-star on the phone.
Okay. We call this the calm before the storm. Okay. All right. Now we'll go to item C1. Brenda, financial audit status.
Thank you, Nick. Good morning, everyone. The supplemental actuary report has been received, and Kelly will share some highlights from that report during the supplemental meeting. This is the final piece that we needed to complete our audited financial statements and the ACFR. So we will be presenting both of those to you at the February board meeting. Are there any questions? Thank you.
Okay. Kelly, Executive Director of Approved Pension Ministerial Action. Sounds like a government thing.
Yes. So page 15 of your agenda shows you the items that used to be on the consent agenda that have been approved. So in this last month, there were 10 retirements, and you can see in January 2023, we had 12. So we're basically right in line with that. We had one person join drop compared to three in the prior year, so it was really nothing unusual on the regular items we approved as part of the rate. Are there any questions on these items? The next item is your monthly contribution report. This is the November report. This is the January report, actually, reflecting the November data. The hiring plan is under by 21 employees, fires over by 194, and police is over by 215, which is pretty consistent with the prior month. In November, we had two payrolls from the city and received almost $12.4 million. So nothing has changed from the prior month. We're on track with where we thought we would be. Are there any questions on this report? No? Okay. The next item is the trustee training. As the last month, you'll remember that we approved both Michael and Nancy to attend the tech first training. It is coming up in April here in Dallas. If anybody else wants to add their name to the list, that's fine, or attend any other classes, we can do that as well. So let me know. We can do that. But we don't need a motion unless somebody wants to add their name today. That way.
Okay. All right, Ryan.
All right, we're already 15 minutes ahead of schedule. Thank you. Morning. Start with the estimated 2023 return. End of the year, it's 9.36% for the entire portfolio, and then 16.8% for the public portfolio ex cash, which is 71% of assets. That 9.3 number will move around a little bit if I'm going to use my own calculation, but it's an estimate for now. On the private market assets, we've gotten $69 million back. Received $69 million in 2023. We'll come to that in a minute, but most of that came from Campbell Square and the JP Morgan Maritime Fund. On the safe reserve, just a reminder that we rebalanced up to target in October. In December, we funded the new global equity manager, WCM, so they're up and running. And then we are about to kick off the Reed Farm, a custodian service to work with Callan to help out with that.
Can we stop for a second? I really do want to just, you know, kind of acknowledge, I know markets are markets, but that we actually exceeded our hurdle rate. Like, it was one to say, first of all, is there a typo? Should it be 0.936% or something like that? But it really, I really tip my hat to the team. I know, once again, we had strong recovery in the markets, but, you know, 17% in terms of liquid securities, a 9 overall, knowing that we have that whole lag issue. So, you know, if PUP or, you know, whatever, if they mark down, then obviously that will adjust what that number is. But, you know, we are trying to put forth a view that where both, you know, what the narrative and reality are the same, that we are now running a functioning ship, but we just lack enough fuel. To me, this is the sort of thing that's a good data point, and Ryan's going to show us later, you know, just doing kind of a similar type job. I look at, okay, well, what's the two-year thing? You know, we had a great 2021, and what's your 22-23 look like? If that's positive, you know, the net of those two, then you're doing pretty well. But I really tip my hat to staff and Ryan in particular. That really is strong. And then, you know, when I look at that, I really look at kind of twin, you know, peaks here. Stewardship of those assets in terms of the last year or two, and then really since the new board came on, the stewardship of the private asset. And we'll see in the slide later how much we've had in realizations without any markdowns on a net basis. Our markdowns are higher, but no markdowns really from 2017 on a net basis. And we combine those two things together. I think that's really, really strong execution by staff, and I just thought that's worth mentioning since Ryan has said we got this.
The second part I'd like to kind of add to that is that that becomes increasingly important as we consider getting the money in and being able to save it to
yeah.
Money. So, and that's important.
Yeah, and there's more slides about that later, but I like, you know, about the whole worth mentioning.
All right, look forward to the next couple quarters. 2 weeks, we have an IAC meeting to start asset allocation planning and discussions there. We've got a plan to run through Q2 and targeting maybe the June report approval if any changes on that. The custodian search will probably be 6 to 9 months if we make a change before we implement the new custodian. And then in Q3 and beyond, hopefully we'll get to some prep market planning and patient studies with all more. So this is a drawdown chart we're looking at how far off the high from early 2022 equity markets are. So that would be within striking distance of the 2022 high. If you look at the global markets with ACWI and EPA, there is a little bit more of a drawdown still. And then EM is a pretty significant drawdown at 22%. So I think mentioned the 2 years before, so a lot of the commentary to see how well S&P did this last year, but we're still in drawdown from 2 years ago. So 2023, 24% return on U.S. stock market, that's the fifth highest year since 2000. Pretty strong returns. We benchmark our equity portfolio to a global benchmark, and ACWI, just a refresh there, that's 63% U.S. in that benchmark. If you look on the left side of the page here, looking at country returns and international markets, everything had pretty strong returns outside of China, which was down 11%. On fixed incomes, a few things to point out here, are small, but strong yields and the returns in the public credit sector are pretty high, with high yield being 13.5% in bank loans of 13. The right side of the page has shown the effective duration on the portfolio and what would happen if there's a 1% rise in interest rates or a fall. And the higher yield is more protected from additional rises in interest rate. to go to our portfolio, 16.8 for the year. If you 3 years, it's up 3.1. If you go out to 5 years, it's up 7.5. So hitting the 6.5 over 5 years time period. NIFTA is good to be positive over a 2 year period. And we are 0.1% positive on the 2 year return for the public portion of the portfolio. On public equity, we underperformed a little bit. And the red numbers on the page are not negative there, just on the performance benchmark. Underperformed a little bit in public equity that's driven mainly by the small cap underperformance and EM exposure that we have. On the fixed income side, returns of 9.4% in the portfolio for 2023. As I mentioned, our credits performed quite a bit during the year. So, any questions on public manager performance? All right. End of the year at $1.938 billion in AUM. $215 million of investment gain, and then $115 million of net outflows. So this is looking at the last 5 years, green bars being net benefit outflows, blue bar is how much is coming in from the private asset portfolio. So overall, we've covered all our outflows of private market returns coming in, which means we have not had to sell any public market assets to cover benefit payments. We've actually been able to add a little bit when the market was down. This machine will turn off fairly soon once we get the next few big sales in, which we don't know when that's going to occur, but the situation will put that, you know, additional money coming in where we won't have as many private market distributions. We'll probably actually have outflows to fund new investments in that portfolio. On the future reserve, one thing to mention here, back at the target is 176 in cash short-term bonds. That covers the payments through June of next year, and we're good on cash amount through the end of Q1, at least. A few slides here on that.
Brian, you go back. I just once again want to make sure, you know, we're all looking at this and you know, I'm kind of getting my view, which anyone can kind of add or subtract to. It's great that we've covered our cash shortfall by this private asset liquidity. But at the same time, if we look at those private assets, and had they been pulling their weight, they would be generating, you know, in excess of our hurdle rate as a return. So we would have been able to cover that cash shortfall by gain. Instead, we covered it by liquidation of basis. And in Brian's script and saying, like, that game's over because you only have so much sort of basis and so many private investments. The private investments have not pulled their weight. That's going to be kind of the biggest understatement of the world relative to this fund. They did serve this short-term purpose in terms of monetization, in terms of funding a shortfall. And so, in a sense, the difficult job, the difficult cause and effect of the debacle of private assets has been somewhat mitigated in the short-term pain of it, via covering the shortfall with the monetization. But that is something only can sustain itself for a short period of time, and we have to get into a mode, which we are evolving into, where our investment assets are across the board all carrying their weight, meaning that over an extended period of time, they're exceeding the hurdle rate. So we have a couple of these different sort of levers and pulleys all working together. A lot of progress, but at the same time, you know, we have these private assets. A few of them are performing, but, you know, several we need to get out of. We want to get out of in a way that we don't, you know, take losses, but we need to have our capital forming across the board. And right now, it's just, you know, it's like an athlete that's, you know, too heavy. Like, they're just carrying a burden in terms of performing and functioning that ideally they wouldn't have to carry. And that's the situation that we inherited. We're working through it. And but I always think it's good to sort of highlight how these things kind of interact with each other.
I have kind of a question.
Mm-hmm.
As we come closer to the fact that a lot of these distributions kind of replenish the reserve, as that dries up, if we need to fill the reserve, are we going to have to kind of look at our investment to liquidate to reserve? I mean, is that going to be kind of continuing?
I should have said that. You're saying what I said in a more clear way. The way we're going to have to fill the tank to the safety reserve is self-functioning assets instead of monetizing, you know, slightly non-functioning illiquid assets.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be in the J curve when we start making new investments and we're going to cash out flows for some period of time. We talked about maybe secondary funds that mitigate that a little bit, but I mean, that's why we have to stay reserve though, because we have an 18-month period that hopefully we won't have to sell any public assets in a drawdown.
Right.
So but the cash management will be much more frequent. We're having to come up with $10 million a month.
Right.
Somewhere in the portfolio.
Right.
And we're lucky right now, the safety reserve is clocking at 5% or,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. You know, back when we set it up a couple years ago, it was clocking at, you know, 50 basis points.
Yeah.
So you know, it's not that far away from our overall hurdle rate, but still it's not the optimal way to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you can run the business with that safety reserve.
Right.
Yeah, now to, you know, the outflow situation, we don't need it.
I
would say we have about as much as peer plans to invest in that, right? We're just short duration on the portfolio. Anything else in the portfolio update before I get into the private asset cash flow presentation? Okay, so this dovetails nicely with some of the stuff already. Talk about in the private portfolio, there's only a few charts here that I want to cover. We've been doing this before since 2018, and as we get down to only have a few big remaining assets, it's kind of less and less useful, but I think it's going to track some of the activity. So this is the chart that I was talking about. We ended the year at $501 million in private market NAV. So that's about a quarter of the portfolio. Since 2016, which is when we initiated secondary sales and liquidating large parts of the private markets portfolio, we've got $1.4 million in distributions and then slightly up in market value with 111 write-ups. There's details on all the asset-by-asset information in the possession folder. I'm diligent. So these are the holdings in the current private market portfolio. You get to know this, the thing to point out here is with Huff, Lone Star, and AEW, 80% of what we plan to sell is in those three assets. We don't have visibility into Huff when that's going to come back. Lone Star, we're hopeful that we might get a little bit of proceeds, Q1 and Q2 possibly, if the company sells. And then AEW, the real estate portfolio they talked to you guys in December, we're kind of working through some refinancing and we don't have anything near term expected there. Look at the quarterly cash flows. We had $17 million back in Q4. So $69 million received in 2023. 92% of that came from Maritime Fund in Campbell Square, which is a real estate investment managed by AEW in Phoenix. So this is looking cash flow by quarter. It's ebbed and flowed. It's going to be, you know, as we mentioned, long run of the work. Hopefully, big chunks coming back from some of the private equity. And then just looking at the allocation over time, I think it'll probably be sometime towards the end of the year, maybe into 2025, that we get closer to that 15% target and start talking about making new investments, essentially. Any questions here? All right. Thank you.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Our total exposure was, let's see, right now 8.3%. What was our goal for?
What was that?
The total exposure real estate.
Oh, yeah. So the target we have long-term is 5% to real estate, 5% to private equity, 5% to natural resources, which is the ag portfolio. So we're at 26% versus target 15% in the asset allocation. I think one thing we'll look at as we did to that asset allocation study is that 15% still appropriate? Do we want to increase there? All right.
All right, Kelly, section 2.025, or 6438-1.
Okay, this is the funding section of our plan. I just wanted to give you an update of what's happened since we last met, and there's not really a lot to update. So we talked about this last month, but later in the afternoon after we met, there was a meeting scheduled for the city pension ad hoc pension committee. That meeting did happen. Rob Walters and Bill Quinn, representing the city study group, presented their report to the committee, and their report really focused on the city's contribution rate at an AGC if you get lump sum payments of four different scenarios, zero lump sum payments coming in, $500 million in 2028, $1 billion, or $1.5 billion in 2028, and then they illustrated what would happen if the city required actuarial determined contribution if those amounts came in. So that was the overall theme of their presentation. In addition to that theme, however, they kind of had a structure in their presentation, which on its face, I would not recommend to the board at this point, but it was their recommendation. And that's what they presented to the committee. So the committee heard that. They also heard the employee plan, ERF, did a presentation on what ERF would like to see in their plan. And that's where the committee left things. The committee will be meeting. They've got four meetings scheduled, one for today, one for the date of our board meeting for next month, not one in March, but then also one in our board meeting day in April and May. Yesterday they scheduled a special board meeting of the whole board, or the whole city council, for Friday the 19th. And it looks like the agenda for that meeting is basically a repeat of what's going to happen at today's meeting, and the agenda looks very similar. So it's kind of interesting that they're doing that special meeting, because eight of the council people are on the pension committee. So now they're doing that special meeting on the 19th. I'm out of town on the 19th, so Josh is going to go with that. The meeting today is a presentation by the CFO where he's going to talk about kind of the information that's been presented to the committee so far. We received late last night a copy of the presentation and have some comments on it for the CFO, and he responded back. We're going to have a call after this meeting to hopefully make some changes. My biggest concern right now is it seems like what's being represented to the committee is that these various groups, Chiron, who's an independent actuary, and this study group, which is called the EPFP study group, in the presentation represents your feelings, and it doesn't.
Yeah, so
we don't know your feelings.
So let's, if you would do this, and once again, Josh can, as an electric shock, he can shock me if I'm going. You have to agree to that as your chairman. Josh has that right. That go over the schedule. Okay, so let's frame a calendar as you understand it. Okay, and then after you frame that, talk about what we are obligated to do in our role of trustees relative to the legislation that's already been passed and the requirements of it, and then what are the common sense other things do you think we need to be aware of?
Do you want to take that at the...
Sure.
Does everyone kind of agree that, or is there anything else like that that you want, how we want the table set up?
I agree. I just have one kind of maybe question or concern. Is that... Is in kind of forcing this issue about like these studies and Chiron and what they're saying, is it just an inadvertent way of them kind of flushing out what we intend to do?
Or,
but they
saying like what is the plan? What is our plan?
Yeah, what is our plan?
That's a good question.
What we both say is what we
that's
are.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the problem that I'm having is I would like to go to the city and say this is what the board wants to do, but we don't know what the board wants to do because the requirements of 2.025 are that the independent actuary does their study and the board considers their recommendations in deciding what you want to do. Well, we really can't do that until we get that next study. I mean, you've seen the first study. It's not going to be that different.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't, like, asked you all to say, you know, where, what exactly do you want? We are way ahead of the schedule, and I think we're still on a good track. I just feel like words are being put into our mouth a little bit. But I don't think there's any value right now in having the board say, we want
to agree.
But I think that's what there is time we're going to have a hierarchy.
Well, and that's what I kind of feel sometimes this is about, like them representing what we want to say when we can't actually have it out for the reasons you described.
Right. I mean, it's very clear. We all agree we want to have the city funded on the ABC, and the city is agreeing to that. It's what's underneath that and how the liability gets amortized, which is the devil in the detail part, where I have a little bit of things that I don't really like. I mean, they were bringing things like keeping a fixed rate contribution until 2028. I don't like that. So it's those little details that we need to work through.
So we're ahead of the timeline, as Kelly said. The statute requires by July 1st, 2024, the PRB selected an actuary. They selected Chiron. Way before that, we hired Chiron. Chiron's doing their work. And then the statute then says by on or before November 1st, the board, meaning you all, will adopt rules that make sure that the plan complies with the funding and amortization requirements under Chapter Section 802 of the Government Code. And what that means in plain English is that you get to a plan that's 30 years to fund. And the actuary says that 30 years to fund. And you're required to take into consideration the actuary's recommendation. So that's what Kelly was saying, is that you all can't really come out and say what you want until you have a final report from Chiron. You have the preliminary report, and now they have the final numbers from 2023, and so they will then go ahead and come out with the final report, which we anticipate. Right now we're waiting here, but we're hoping it's going to be at the March meeting, that they'll come back to you all with the final report. And then the final piece of this puzzle is, in the statute, is that before December 1st, the PRB is then required to submit a report to the legislature regarding what actions the board has taken under the section. And that would include a copy of the rules you adopt, as well as a copy of the actuary's report. And I don't know what else, their discretion, I suppose, to be to say what's going to be in that report. We are anticipating that we will be well ahead of schedule in terms of the November 1st deadline. I do think, in terms of trying to work out something with the city, there's a lot of different ways the board can choose to kind of try to get to that, to get to a point where you all have made a decision and then have discussions, whatever you want to call it. The plan does allow you to adopt rules and then amend the rules as long as they're still within 30 years to fund. So there's lots of different ways to sort of get to a place where you can have discussions with the city, if meaningful discussions can be had. The only reason I say that is we hope that we can, but the city's got a lot of different, as some of you have observed things know, the city talks to a lot of different voices, and so sometimes it's hard to know who exactly you're talking to about who's the authority. So I think, you know, before the board does anything, we, from the DPSP perspective, would want clarity as to who we're talking to and who has authority and who's able to do what. So that's getting a little ahead of things, but a little bit of the cart before the horse. But the first item right now is Chiron will come in, give you the final report, and then the board then determines what the rules, the ultimate plan changes, the rules to adopt to get to the 30 years.
So, in Karen's report, they present three scenarios.
in their preliminary report, that's what they presented. I don't know what they'll do in the final.
Okay.
I don't know
fair
if
enough.
They have one or three. Or
but it seems like there are features of that initial report that people are hanging on to.
Right.
Is it helpful to say, well, the scenario with no initial infusion is not on the table?
For us to tell Kyra on that?
No, the city. If we're being flushed for council or the ad hoc committee, in trying to just say, okay, we're getting closer to that, there are scenarios that are just not, they have presented it, which is just the one with the gradient or with no initial funding. Is it just useful to say, okay, of variations, that is not one of them?
It could be helpful. But the problem is, I know this is like making the decision. So right now, I think if you look at the report.
Oh, wait, you just said something. We don't know who's making the decision. The decision is what?
I don't know who is the who's driving the bus over there on this issue. I don't know if it's the city manager, the city ad hoc committee. I don't know. I don't know where the pieces are. I do know things are getting changed over there. I mean, for example, I know Bill and Rob went back with the scenario and they said no and it got changed. So clearly not an independent committee because the scenario that Rob and Bill kind of liked when they left the meeting with us got washed along the way. I don't know where it got. So it doesn't really matter. I think at this point they're saying they put in 20, 40, 60, 90. It's the devil's in the details. And that's what we have to do.
Let's make sure we're all working from the same vocabulary, same definition. Tell me if I'm saying this correctly. We use that phrase ABC. Okay. 30 years the liability is funded. What that means is that every year holds its weight. Okay? So that statistically, the way it would work, if you, in 30 years, you've paid off the liability and paid all your benefits and all those sorts of things. So you have investment returns, outflows, and then additional liability. And that every year, there's a certain amount that mathematically plugs it so that you're 1 year closer to 30 years. So every year pulls its weight in ABC. Right? Yeah.
Well, you have to get there in 30 years, but you can choose to.
Well, I'm just
back end loaded.
But at its core, let's agree that ABC, and we say kind of plain vanilla ABC, every year pulls its weight. So you never get behind. Okay? What naturally people who have to fund this want to do is say they concur on the overall problem and they concur on the goal, but our plan is I'll gladly pay you Thursday for a cheap burger today. Okay? So Wendy said that in Popeye. And so their plan is to shortchange the earlier years in terms of pulling its weight and catching up on later years. Okay? The feedback I gave, just informally speaking, really as Nick, one member of the board not speaking for the will, is that that kind of concept was not acceptable. I wasn't on board with something that gets behind. What I did talk to them about, which was broad brush, was that they do need a little bit of time, that we would agree to something like that, but that there would be, in a sense, a mandate to sell some assets so that those asset sales in the first 1, 2, or 3 years would plug the shortfall so that each year pulled its own weight. And if they didn't do that, then there would be an immediate catch-up. So that sort of concept I talked to them about broadly and generally. Kelly and Josh were there as well, and just sort of made that known, like, that's a kind of, to me, a path of kind of common ground. correctly pointed out, when we say ADC, let's think about it. Every year we pull some waste, and city wants the early years not to pull some waste, and the later years to overpull some waste, which to me is, you know, it's a matter of degree, but that is maybe on paper solving the problem, but it doesn't essentially solve the problem. It doesn't make people who are in the force feel like, yeah, we have, you know, a pension now more solid than it was before. I don't think it helps in recruiting. I don't think it helps in retention. Whereas I would hope and think that things that provided more cash earlier might help achieve some of those goals.
So that concept that Nick just talked about, we put that, I've been doing the graph for Rob and Bill at their request to try to avoid them having another actuary do it and numbers that didn't match, but also lessen our expenses with Chiron. So they moved the Chiron numbers. But we had made the adjustment based on the description that Nick just told you.
Okay.
And Rob and Bill both agreed to that, and they took that over to the city. What was presented ended up being presented to the city, ripped that out. So that's where it is, like, you know, this board will come up with what you want to present or support, and you'll make the rules to support that. But right now, our voice isn't out there because we haven't put it out there.
So we are talking about obligation versus weighing in. We're obligated to present a plan we're obligated to agree on a plan that achieves 30 years funding, right?
Correct. We're obligated, the board is obligated to adopt a plan that does that. That is really the only, considering the actuary's recommendations, that's really the sole requirement under
55. Yeah. And so we can adopt a plan without, and we would never do this, it'd be foolish, never communicating with the city. Just saying, I mean, that's what, it never doesn't say in consultation with the city.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's not a smart thing to do. We want to do it on a consensual basis because they have to fund and it's, you know, their police and fire. I mean, we want to do it in a way that ends up with a net good result. But just I want everyone to kind of recognize what the playing field looks like right now with lots of question marks, but what things we actually must do and then what are the common sense things to do.
So, Kelly, your involvement in these committee meetings now is just as an observer, or are you giving input into any of the discussion?
The very first meeting they had, they asked for some very specific background material, which I presented. But anything of substance, we've just been observing. We have, like, you know, I really have spent a lot of time assisting Rob and Bill with their analysis. And then, you know, this week I think I've had 5 different requests from the CFO from the city. But I'm happy to help however I can, but we just have to try to support
however. Do you have a provider of input?
I have not presented to the committee any input. I've made very clear that Chiron said they wouldn't support this. I would not recommend us to board. Those are the types of feedback I've made to CFO, but not to the committee.
Is there any presentations the CFO sent out with the last night?
No, but I reviewed it this morning. It was like 5 a.m. So, and he has the comments when we were called later. So I'm not sure how that will change.
So do you have any feedback on why the information you presented to Bill and Rob was either taken out? You said from feedback from the city there, but have you got any?
They don't want for that much money in the future. I think it's just that. It was $75 million that ended up getting deferred in those 3 years that then you add back in. And the whole motivation was if you sell the assets, then you don't have to make that up. So, I mean, it made a lot of sense
for things. Yeah, I mean, Bill used the statement that, Bill is a mentor to me, but our interests are not aligned with his and Rob. He and Rob signatures are aligned in many respects, but not completely aligned. And so he, when I was saying, like, I wouldn't be for something that has a big back end, he said, well, Nick, you know, if Chiron and we present a credible plan, and, you know, what's the definition of credible? Something that on an Excel spreadsheet works, you know, yeah, I'd say, you know, nay to that. I mean, I want something that we can talk to people that are recruiting officers and firemen and people who are thinking of retiring and saying, yes, that is a trust-enhancing movement that makes me feel better about my future. To me, that's the goal, not something that's credible on itself.
Well, and to your point, I think, you know, the public perception, the information that, you know, there was the op-ed being sponsored.
Yeah, it was our main
thought, yeah. So, I mean, you know, the perception from the people is it needs to be thick, and they're going to want to look for a solution. So anything that's back-end loaded, I think, to your point, is not going to give that feeling that it's fixed.
And I would just say this about my kind of, you know, sort of business instincts tell me, first of all, you can't unsay anything you say. So I don't want to, you know, go in and put a bunch of bravado and, you know, say, I mean, because I don't know how to do that. The other thing, too, is just personally, I have zero experience dealing in sort of a public forum of, you know, the politics and all that. So, I mean, I welcome input from you people that have more experience, and I feel like I have good business experience and accomplishments. I don't have any experience dealing with this kind of thing. You know, I was, you know, looking at Frank, you know, I know Sean Todd real well, but just did that Fairfield Lake thing, and, you know, I was watching him in public and thinking, man, I'm glad, you know, I'm not having to talk like that. So I am very open to those of you that have more experience in that area of helping guide, you know, me and others through these discussions.
Yeah.
But my instincts are, you know, don't shoot, you know, don't say things that you don't actually believe and don't want to back up, and don't posture, you know, because of just the law of unintended consequences.
One thing I would note, since, you know, Bill and Rob have been actively involved and presented a couple of times now, they may well remain involved, we're not quite sure. I think the conversations that the five of Nick, Kelly, myself, and Bill, and Rob had were very good. They were frank, but I think everybody needs to understand, you know, publicly, everybody understands their roles. I think while Bill and Rob are former trustees and they understand the pension system, I think it was made quite clear that they are not, they recognize they are not wearing a pension trustee hat anymore. They are wearing whatever hat that is. I think we may have slight questions about which hat that is, but it's not a pension trustee hat. And they acknowledge that freely. So everybody knows what they're doing. Right, and that's why I want to say it, and we'll say it again. Like, everybody knows, like Nick said, interests are not, there's respect, but interests are not necessarily aligned here. And that's, everybody acknowledges that.
And everybody's got the same goal, just how we get there. I mean, they tend to really do want to solve it. Right. They want to solve it without creating panic for the members and the community. And you know, and all that is right. It's just the little details we're hung up right now.
Well, there are little details on words on paper that have huge.
Well,
yeah. The shall versus may of the world, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So,
but okay, this goes back into like the community and messaging and what have you, and like any plan that's backloaded versus just another measure of kicking it down, kicking the can down the road, you know. Again, it is too late essentially because we didn't have the information, we didn't have a plan to kind of, you know, start messaging this. And like start, do we get the plan and say, okay, this is what we want to do, and like have like a public relations or something like that? Because it seems to me that the reasonableness of Bill and Ross' plan initially has been shot down, and this idea of money up front is not going to be, but it's very imperative, and it's probably something to consider.
I think, if I recall, I mean, I think we kind of had a version 1.0 of that where we're talking about possibly a PR, you know, making sure we. And I think that at least at that time, and it may have changed, is that it would not be it might be counterproductive to do that.
Right.
My view is this probably could be very counterproductive to try to massage our message to the media, particularly with the other interests that are involved. They may not take kindly to that. And once things go out in the public, we really don't control it.
Right.
In some ways, the best move to me might be what's actually in the statute is wait to see what happens. And after that, you know, then you start the dialogue. And maybe that dialogue goes on behind, you know, more personal. But I just don't know if there's any real benefit at this time or even in the next couple of months to have a public face.
Yeah, I agree. That would make it more complex and confusing. Most importantly, we need the right kind of messaging. But there's a time and place for that messaging. And once we determine which way is the best for all folks concerned, then we can take a step toward, you know, what's the right way to message this and have consistency of that message going forward.
Hearing that, I agree, but I do think that these are arcane ideas as far as actuarial and amortization and unfunded liability and all this, like, and there has to be a better way for our members to understand that it actually needs to discuss and the line of who's dividing what. I mean, it gets blurry here.
But that's different.
I'm changing it as I'm speaking out loud. So I agree. It is different to what I initially said, but our members are very confused.
And they have bad information.
And they have very bad information.
Because stuff is coming out from all of these city meetings. The city is meeting with all the associations. They're meeting with closed groups, and have you had members reach out to you and say, we're hearing that 70% is going to be the maximum
for two years?
That's just one of 10 different things I don't think we need to pay for a PR person. Just know that they're, it's hurting our interest that it's going after for our members here. And everything they're hearing so far seems to be incorrect.
Yeah.
Here's what I would propose is, you know, kind of our ad hoc messaging. Is that, and this to me is the biggest point of leverage, we are obligated to present and to adopt a plan by the end of the year that takes what is the 68 years, what's the years to fund, bro? How many years is it?
83?
Yeah.
2105 minus 2063.
82. 82. Okay. So we are obligated by statute to adopt a plan that takes the current status quo, which is 82 years, and makes it 30 years. Okay? And in doing so, which we're obligated to do, our goal is to adopt a plan that will make all of you feel better, and in reality actually will make the pension plan more solvent and real, and will make you feel on the trust issue, we have made forward progress. That is what we're obligated, and that's what our intention is. The details of how we do that, relative to the city, relative to NBO PRB and all that, is what we're working through this year. But that is what we're obligated to do, and that's our intention around that obligation. How does that feel for kind of ad hoc messaging right now?
Mm-hmm.
And our recommendation will be based on the final actuarial report that we received at some point, which the city is not taking into account.
I mean, the math part. We're well aware that the city PC and this group are meeting with they're lobbying, they're trying to do it, and you know, I think. The messaging you guys can give to your, you know, respective departments is like, look, the board is 100% behind making, you know, sort of Nick's point, like we're 100% behind getting this plan solvent. And, you know, I'm sure this is the encouragement that you have to take with more than a grain of salt what the city leadership is saying to you in these meetings. I mean, there's these discussions.
discussions are going to be ongoing, and, you know, just tight, the board is behind you, and it's just, you can't help the city. You know, the city's got the ability to do that. They can drag you guys in there, talk to you, talk to your leaders, and talk to the leaders of your associations and the retirement associations, but, you know.
Yeah, Josh, I just would say, the whole concept, we're obligated to take this from 82 to 30 years. We're the only group that is obligated to do something out here. By statute, that's the law that got passed in 2017. So we're going to do that. And we're going to do that in a way that we think will, from a common sense, you know, working person sort of standpoint, makes you feel like this is more solvent. And that's what we're obligated to do this year. No one else is obligated to do anything else other than we're obligated to take it from 82 to 30 years. And we're going to do that in a way that we believe that once we adopt it, you all feel much, much better about the certainty and risks involved with pension.
And I understand that. I think everybody in this room understands that. But I think at some point, not today, but at some point, having hearing it from you or Kelly, somebody, I think that, because I'm a broken record, just letting you know this, I think that the numbers in the fire department, I think it would go somewhere. There would be some weight to that because the city is filling their heads with all kinds of things.
I don't know if the best way to do it.
Exactly what she said. I think it would be valuable.
Happy to do that. I mean, really look to you two, you three. You know, happy to go smaller groups, bigger groups, and message that right now.
And still, I hate to bring stuff, but it has to be brought up. It's not just us, it's other plans that have to be there. Other issues. And there's two in this city. And that are doing the same thing to this city manager. And they, we're going to also have to be funded in 30 years. So when you consider a finite pool, there is a politicking of another fund, and it also gets used with the firefighters. The firefighters and the police are understanding that it's not just them asking the city.
I'm not quite certain what are you by saying that, which we know that there are other pension funds. I'm not quite certain what does that mean. That's a true statement, but I don't know how that changes what we as a board for the pension fund can and should do.
Agreed.
Now, I do believe that, and I'm available too, if it's helpful to let the membership of the police force and the fire department understand, you know, who the players are and what they're doing, and understand that not everybody's charge, if they have any charge, are the same. I'm also happy to have a
Yeah, we're open to that, and the only thing, my own two cents is, let's not go negative on anyone else. Let's not disparage anyone else. That's not our job. Our job is to adopt a plan this year that goes from 82 to 30 years, and we're content to recognize the world we live in. And but that's our job, and we're going to do it. You guys will have a 30-year funded plan adopted by us by the end of the year, and we think that, you know, a reasonable person will look at the changes from the status quo and think this pension is in better shape.
Yeah, there's so many interests now, and that's the, in some ways, our benefit is that our charge is very clear.
Yeah.
As far as this board, you know, unions and other interests of a variety of parties, not only parties, but the fire department and the police and police officials, there's other, like, the Tina said, there are other parties also making, but our goal, which is really to our benefit, is very, very defined and clear. And I think that's an asset, not a liability.
I agree. Yep. Josh only shocked me twice, so it's good. Everyone feel like they have a better sense of the schedule, the mandate, the obligations. kind of that this concept of every year carries its own. Kind of the bid ask will be underfunding here, later years, and you know, we want the other way, and then potential proceeds from selling city controlled assets, how that can plug it, and the price of time, and all those are the big crumbs, big nuances that, you know, that are with Kelly in the details. That's what it's all about.
Quick question, Nick. On the schedule, when is the final actuary report posted?
The final actuary report has been delivered. Chiron has it. They've already, the first step is replicating the legal valuation, which I know they've completed with no problem. The contract allows them 90 days to come up with their final report, which would put it at March 8. We could get it before that, but that's their no.
And once we get that, do we discuss about an incentive minute in November?
That's the statutory deadline, but I anticipate we want to do it way as soon as we have. We will get the report from Chiron, they'll do a presentation, and then the board will decide what to do from there. And I think the sooner the board makes the decision, the better we are. There's no reason to wait until November. If we may or something like that, ahead of the city budget.
Okay. So then we present you convey the recommendation to the city?
Of course, yeah. We'll let them know what the board would like to do.
And then they have until November.
The city isn't involved with this process. According to if you follow our statute, the board can adopt the plan, the rules, how you see fit. We definitely are going to take into consideration what the city would like to see. But the city doesn't have to agree, according to Section 2.025.
They don't have to agree, and so I'm kind of just trying to play this out. If they don't agree, then what?
But I think at this point, we're probably leading into a legal discussion, which we can talk about closer.
Okay.
To legal.
Fair enough.
But your mind's taking you to the ambiguity of what then, and
okay.
and that's where all of us, you know, but we need to kind of get through multiple gates before we get to that. And we hope it doesn't get to that. We hope that when we adopt the plan, the goal would be that the city council, whatever is the affirmation process, that we would all have an agreement, and that what we approve and what they approve would be the same thing. That would be the goal, because that's reality. And then the people who this actually affects would know that it's real. It's not, you know, us adopting something the city says we don't concur with, whatever. That's a lose-lose. We don't want that. We want the city to agree with the plan that we adopt. But, you know, that's going to be... That, you know, that was going to take some work.
Yeah, I think I would just reemphasize what I said and Kelly said. We definitely want to engage with the city and have a consensual plan, but we, meaning DCFD, need to understand very clear who's talking for the city. Because right now we're hearing about eight different voices and we don't really know. And that we need clarity. And, you know, my advice, I think I would concur, like, we not engage in discussions until we know that there is someone who has some authority on the city's part to basically say that that thing can get done. So.
All right. So, with that, anything else before we go into closed session, executive session? All right. Let's do it.